The Kinky Cocktail Hour is brought to you by Motor Bunny, the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator that offers fabulous creative sexual experiences. We use it and it rotates, it vibrates, and it delivers mind-blowing orgasms. Enjoy Motor Bunny as your favorite sex toy. When you order the Motor Bunny, multiple attachments are included along with the Link controller, which allows wireless control from anywhere. Motor Bunny is the world's most powerful saddle-style vibrator on Earth. Use the link in the show notes and spice up your sex life with a Motor Bunny. You're listening to Kinky Cocktail Hour, a conversation between adults about sex-forward relationships, kinky lifestyles, and frank communication. If you're under 18, please stop listening and visit scarletteen.com. Hi, this is Lady Petra.
I'm Safa Master.
And this is Kinky Cocktail Hour.
Cheers.
Cheers. Hi, I'm Lady Petra, and my pronouns are she, her, and hers.
And I'm Safa Master, and my pronouns are his, him, and he. So what are we drinking today?
We are having a PIMS cup.
A PIMS cup.
It's a super old drink.
Yeah.
And it's equal parts of PIMS number one and ginger ale.
Okay.
And then you're supposed to, when you stir it, I stirred it first, and then you're supposed to stir it with the cucumber, orange, and apple in there.
Uh-huh.
We didn't have apple, but we had cucumber and orange, so we did that.
Okay.
And then that's your drink.
Well, this is an interesting drink. You know, I grew up in South Africa.
Yeah.
And this was something you would commonly hear ordered at the club or at the bar on a hot summer's day. PIMS cup.
Yeah, so it's actually made by Jim PIMS in the UK around 1830. So it's a real old drink.
It's very floral.
I've never had PIMS straight up, so I don't know what PIMS he does is like.
Tastes like this minus the ginger ale.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, there's a spiciness too.
Yeah, you get the ginger ale, and it's kind of like, it like softens and smooths out the ginger ale, is what it does.
Yeah, it's like, am I wrong? Is it spicy tasting? It's like gingerbread in a drink.
Yeah.
I mean, that tastes like gingerbread.
Gingerbread drink. What I love is you get the, in the nose, you get the cucumber and the orange, like, immediately.
Right. Right away. Yeah.
So it's a really lovely drink. It's a great, you can imagine, on a hot summer's day.
Well, yeah, on a hot summer's day, this you can see this as a total, yeah.
So when I go to the cricket matches at the Wanderers Club,
uh-huh,
in the bars, I'd be serving PIMS cups.
Wow, I can see why, though.
Yeah.
It's a great drink.
Mm.
I like it. Good idea for choosing it today.
So today on our podcast, we are going to talk about a topic that I think is very important in the BDSM world, and that is this topic of red flags in a dynamic, in a BS dynamic. And I was motivated to speak to this after finding a post that was in the BDSM community Reddit page posted by our guest, who goes by Kinky and Nerdy, with underscores between the words. So first of all, welcome, Lily.
Hi.
And thanks for joining us. So tell us a little bit about who you are and, you know, what your kink is and, you know, where you're at in your exploration of yourself.
I have been involved in BDSM for about 5 years. I started out as a submissive, but have evolved into kind of a hedonist who's into a little bit of everything. I'm primarily a dominant sadist, but I like a whole lot of different things, pretty much.
Gotcha. All right, very good. And so what occurred to you to have you post this conversation about red flags? Like what were you dealing with?
I noticed a lot of people were dealing with bad situations, like online. I've read a lot of people talking about, you know, oh, is this, you know, something I should be concerned about, or talking about abuse they've been through with, you know, either dominants or submissives who have, you know, done things that are not acceptable, and I think a lot of new people simply don't know what to expect and don't understand what kind of behavior to, you know, accept in their relationships. And so I wanted to post that writing to help guide newer doms and subs and kinksters who, you know, don't know the difference between BDSM and kink and abuse.
Gotcha. Yeah, one of the things that I was present to, Lady Petra and I were talking about this earlier, is that a lot of these guidelines that we're going to touch on today actually apply to all relationships.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, I think there's an important aspect of interacting with red flags in kink for obvious reasons, because there's, you know, bondage and impact play and, you know, other sort of aspects that go beyond a vanilla relationship. But the root of all of this is about emotional security. And it occurs to me that we're really talking about, whether you're dominant or submissive, maintaining your agency as a person, regardless of the aspect of your dynamic. Let's go on and talk about the specifics. So the first item that you noted in your post is that people might react negatively to not getting what they want right away. And I think that if that's true, like, for example, if you're in a dynamic and the person you're with is demanding something of you and you choose not to provide that at the moment and they get upset, I think that goes down as a red flag.
Yes, I agree. I think that if somebody's not willing to wait and they just want to dive into a 24/7 TPE, you know, thing right away, that's not something that's reasonable to expect. And that's either a signal of inexperience or someone who's just looking to take advantage of you.
Yeah. That was true for Lady Petra and I. We had a long series of conversations for months before we even considered a TPE.
Yeah.
Okay. The next one on the list that you point out is that if people want to jump into things without discussing them, that pretty simply doesn't fly.
You can't consent to something if you haven't talked about it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's all right. sorts of conversations, whether it's kinks or limits or safe words. Like, there are lots of aspects to conversation that precede participating in a kink dynamic that are really essential, I think, to interact with.
Yes, I agree. And I find that personally, I operate on a basis of, if we haven't talked about it, then the answer is no right now.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
I think that's fair, because I was thinking along the lines of, when people are discussing, that doesn't mean there's full understanding or hearing or listening during that period. Sometimes things are brought up could be, for any number of reasons, for a sub, shocking at first, but it doesn't mean it's a hard no. It just means it's first time they've heard of it.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that occurs to me as I read this particular red flag is that essentially all of kink is a conversation about consent. That's the first thing.
Yes.
And then the second thing is that there's no way to actually have a dynamic if trust isn't present. And if you're not having a conversation that's built around consent and you're not actually creating an environment of trust, there really isn't a dynamic there.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So the third one you point out is that if you attempt to start a dynamic without any prior negotiation, it's sort of the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
No one's first contact, you should be demanding something from you or swearing their submission to you. And I think that really gets to the point, right? Like, you don't begin a conversation at the end point. You start a conversation at the beginning. You know, Lady Petra and I talk a lot about, like, having clean communication. And clean communication is really putting aside, you know, a lot of your assumptions and your preconceived notions, and really getting into a conversation that is framed around what I want you to do to me and what I want to do to you, and vice versa.
rather than demanding or just saying, I want to do this right now, I find it's better to have a discussion of, hey, I would like to do this thing. Are you interested in doing this thing?
Yeah.
That's generally the kind of talk that I like to have, since I'm open to kind of casual play with people. I don't like to have people contact me and be like, oh, mistress, I'll do anything you want. I would rather they say, hi, Lily, I noticed that you're into this thing, and I am also into this thing. Perhaps we could get together and do something. That's how I like to be contacted and how most, you know, dominant women that I know like to be contacted.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think that the whole notion that we see in the way that people express themselves, especially to Lady Petra, with these outrageous demands of, like, you know, like, this is my kink and I'm going to demand that you participate in it. It just
there's
doesn't...
just the expectation of you just delivering whatever kink they have, and that yeah. you don't even matter. You're just interchangeable with any vagina-owning person.
That's so nuts on. Yeah. They just think they can. And to be honest, speaking along the lines of the consent, no consent, they'll send you messages that are, in my view, and not I'm not consenting to that kind of conversation. And they'll just blatantly just say things that I just think are appalling. And it's my first interaction with this person. And I'm like,
exactly.
Really?
Especially
I mean,
when it's
who
the first
are you?
Interaction.
So I think one of the things that comes to mind is the next topic where people talk about being a true dom or a true sub. I got that a lot when I first was discovering my kink online, as if a way to coerce me into choosing them. I mean, I didn't even know anything about these people, and they were discounting other dominance or other things out there. And usually those people were on the fringes already. So I didn't, you know, I didn't fall for that, but I can see a submissive being desperate. I mean, cause I see it all the time. And then just listening to this person like they're the expert of the world without having a further conversation.
Yeah. No, it's totally true. I mean, I think one of the things that, like, I've discovered in my relationship with you, for example, is that whatever preconceived notion I had about being a dom or a sadist was completely altered by my actual experience with you. And so... Mm-hmm. And so the reality is that I didn't set a standard, like a pole in the middle of a field and say, come to this place. We really had to find a way to meet each other and grow together in our kink. And so there's really no way to define what a true dom or a true sub is, because everybody in kink is dominant or submissive at some level.
Well, isn't it also about declaring? I mean, if you have just chosen yourself as a sub or a dom or a switch, that's your choice to declare that. And that's what's so.
Yeah.
And the reality is on FetLife, a lot of times you'll see shaming happen, sub shaming or slave shaming, or do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're not dominant enough because you're whatever age you are, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I just think, much like what happens in regular society, there's a shaming, a hierarchical shaming going on, and we have to like address that as a community and not let that happen.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think Lily's point is that if somebody steps out and says, this is what a true dom or a sub is, you can think of that as a red flag, because it literally, there's no such thing.
It's all about compatibility, I find. It's rather than thinking a true dom or a true sub does this, it's rather, this is what I want my dom to do or my sub to do, rather than what a quote-unquote true one would do.
Sure. Correct.
Yeah. I think the next item you bring up, which is that they try to push you into doing things that you're not comfortable with, is a really important thing to talk about. I mean, there's definitely... space for stretching a submissive, for example. But again, we literally are having a conversation that lives in the world of consent. And, you know, I've definitely had the experience in the past of having a submissive who gave me her consent, but was also wanting me to push her into places she was uncomfortable with. But again, you can't have that conversation without there first being consent.
And I think for that, something like that, there needs to be a lot of trust involved as well. You can't just go headfirst into something that deep without establishing, you know, some trust mutually.
Yeah.
That takes time.
No, that's correct.
Yeah, and I want to put out this, since I'm switchy, and but I'm very submissive to Saffir, but this is something that comes up for me. Is I've consented to all this, whatever it is, this box of stuff. But on any given day, based on life, based on hormones, based on health, based on whatever, it may not be appropriate at that day. I mean, you know, do you see what I'm saying? People are humans, and we're constantly changing. And so there has to be continued conversations and negotiations and discussions in order to find out what's comfortable with the particular place scene you're entering into, if that makes sense. And I think sometimes submissives are afraid to say anything at all, because what does that mean? Oh, I'm not a good submissive anymore. Well, actually, I think it means you're a great submissive if you give context to your dominant to say, hey, this is where I'm at today, you know?
I agree.
I
find it as a dominant myself, especially important to know what my sub or bottom is feeling, because then if I have the authority, I need to know those things to make the decisions myself.
Right.
Because I want to make good decisions for my submissive, and I need that information. If I don't have it, it would upset me to know that I did something to hurt them when I didn't mean to do that in that way.
Well, and something that resonates with me early on in my play with Saffir was he made it clear, because there's nothing wrong, and he would say, I don't break my toys. And I swear, I just kind of put a pin in that in the back of my mind at all times, so that when my subby self would go through all this kind of reactive mind conversation about what I should be or should do or how to please, I could look at that and then say to him, okay, let me tell you what's really going on here. And it was always a safe conversation to have. I didn't feel like it was okay if I say this is ending the dynamic because he wanted to play and I couldn't do this or whatever, or last or whatever it was. It really is a organic dynamic. That's why it's called dynamic, obviously, and it's not static, so people are changing and we have to address that.
Yes.
Yeah, and I would go further. I would say that this is true for both the dom and the sub. You both literally have to be responsible both for who you're being and for how you're occurring to the other person, and also for how they're occurring to you. And so as a dom, you've got to monitor your sub's body language. You've got to monitor, you know, their interaction and response. You've got to monitor what their status is at all times. Because if somebody's in subspace, they may not communicate out. But as long as there's trust present, and as long as there's communication about the scope of whatever it is you're participating in at the moment, then within that, you can have that experience of, you know, maybe pushing somebody's limits without doing something they're uncomfortable with, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. And you saying that about paying attention to body language reminds me of a situation I had with a submissive where her thing essentially was to be beaten until she was so deep in subspace she couldn't talk anymore. So there was a lot of responsibility on my end to check in with her and make sure that she was still there, and to stop once she kind of wasn't talking anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the point, right? Like we're not automatons. And, you know, the issue here that we're having a conversation about is red flags in a dynamic. And so it's really important, even when you're in a dynamic, if the person you're with is trying to push you into doing things you're not comfortable with, that you literally have a conversation about what you're comfortable with and what you're not comfortable with. It's very important. Otherwise, you're going to let that go and then find yourself in some danger potentially.
Yes.
Yeah. I think the next one is more for people who are interested in meeting for the first time, potentially. And if they aren't familiar with BDSM basics, I wouldn't jump into a scene with them, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And that's pretty self-explanatory. But right. I mean, a lot of what happens in BDSM involves, you know, concern for the other person's well-being. And so, you know, whether it's safety or whether it's, you know, making sure that the there's aftercare, whatever it is, if you don't have sort of a familiarity with how scenes go, probably not smart to jump into a relationship with them in kink. Maybe you can develop together as kinksters, but I wouldn't assume if you're an experienced kinkster and you're dating somebody who's not an experienced kinkster, that they can play in a way that's safe for you.
Yes.
I think the next one is probably the most serious red flag that exists in a DS dynamic, and that's if your partner does not allow you to withdraw your consent. You know, this is one I'll go to the mountain and die on. There's no such thing as you can't withdraw your consent. People have agency, and you may have agreed to do something, and then you may no longer feel comfortable with what you've agreed to do, and you may choose to say, no, I don't want to do that anymore. And if your partner refuses to allow you to withdraw your consent, stop playing with that person.
It's time to get out at that point.
Get out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I have personal experience with that. When my partner, when I first got with him, used to choke me a lot. And mm-hmm. I, at the time, I was pretty new to kink, and I didn't know of the safety issues with choking. And once I read more about it and understood it, I was no longer comfortable doing it. And I told him, hey, I don't like that anymore. So I don't want to do that anymore. And he said, okay. And that was it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
That's how it should be.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I agree. Yeah.
Well, and that just gets back to the whole point of withdrawing consent is like immediately stop play, needs to stop, and whether there needs to be aftercare in mid play or whatever needs to happen. And the reality is, in any given day, even if I like to do a certain thing all the time, that day may not be working. And I should be able to withdraw consent and say, it's not working for me today. Yeah. And without any, no harm, no foul kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. The next one you had is if they don't want to meet in public first or don't respect basic safety measures. I think this is just common sense, right? If the person you're meeting is not prepared to meet you in public and insists on meeting you in a hotel room, I would have a red flag up. I would absolutely have a red flag up.
Yeah.
I feel that in that situation, especially if it's, you know, a man refusing to meet a woman in public, I feel that they aren't empathizing with how dangerous it is for women and how they just don't understand what, you know, we have to go through. And I find that that lack of awareness is kind of troubling.
Oh, it's extremely troubling. It's very presumptive. Right. It assumes that you're consenting to something you've not discussed.
Well, and also if they have that much of a callous behavior assumptions on their part in that respect, that's not just one area of their life where that is going to appear. It's going to appear in other areas because we're always consistently ourselves all the time. So if someone's willing to do that, that's a huge red flag that there are other areas that is going to, you know, wield its head up and come up within the dynamic. So it scares me. Yeah.
Yeah. Just disregarding basic safety measures is not okay.
No.
Yeah. I think the next one is really more in the world of emotional abuse and control, right? And this is one of those areas where this could be in any relationship, doesn't have to be a DS dynamic, but when your partner is attempted to control where you go and who you talk to, that's not normal. It's just not normal in relationships.
Right. No, but I think people, the reason why I include something like that is because sometimes people don't understand that thing. There are things in BDSM and DS that are not normal too, and that they don't have to agree to anything because they're submissive, and that there are things that are still considered abusive in BDSM. It's not like a free-for-all where you just get to, you know, the dom gets to do whatever the hell they want. That's not how it works.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's why I said at the outset, you know, a lot of these things are true in relationship as well as in a BDSM relationship. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're in a vanilla relationship and your husband, for example, is refusing to allow you to meet with your friends or your family, that kind of emotional abuse is completely unacceptable. And you add that to a DS dynamic where you've got a submissive who, by definition, is submitting to the dom. And then you layer that level of emotional abuse on top of it. It's a formula for disaster.
It can be very painful, yes.
The next one I want to take on to get it started, because this really hits home for me. When people claim they have no limits or they're looking for a sub that has no limits.
Yeah.
So this was part of my exploration early on when I thought I was a slave, right? Until I figured out that people were telling me I couldn't make any decisions. What was hard for me at that time is all the hierarchical competition of, like, you know, to be a sub's okay, but if you're a slave, that's the way to go. But what I was more in tune with at that time was I'm for the chosen person, whoever I choose to submit to, I'm deeply submissive. You know, I would say in some respects I'm slave-like in certain areas. And so I identify with that. I don't like the word slave, but I identify with that type of orientation. But no limits? Like, I don't know if I want to be a chair for the rest of my life or a table lamp for the rest of my life. I mean, I have agency. I can't not have agency. And so those were considerations. And when I went first searching, lots of people were like, nope, you're just a sub. It doesn't matter. You have no limits. You get to make no decisions, nothing. And I was like, nope.
Yeah.
That's not going to work for me, you know?
And that again goes with the expecting everything upfront thing, where that kind of thing of even people who do have no choices anymore and
yes.
chose to give up everything to their dom, they didn't do that from day one. That evolved.
No.
That became
yes.
a thing.
And it's their choice too. There's still, whether we like it or not, there's agency because they have to choose that.
It's consent. Yep.
Yeah. For it to even be happening.
They chose
yeah.
that. It
yeah.
wasn't thrust upon them. And just, but also people who are looking for no limit, who claim they have no limits up front and are, you know, just claiming you can do whatever to them, I find that to be a red flag, because often those people don't have enough experience to know
yes.
that, you know, if I tell them to, you know, paint their face red and stand on their head every Thursday for 30 minutes, you know, that might be a limit for them. And they,
right.
you know, or if I get out the chainsaw, that might just be a limit.
Right.
And
right.
so, you know, very often there are limits. They just don't know enough to know, like, that there's a little more than just tying you up and tickling you with a feather.
Right.
Know?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think everybody has limits. And I think that when somebody says they have no limits, you just have to go to the extreme case. You bring up the chainsaw, for example. But if I say to you, look, if I'm going to take out a hammer and basically beat your balls to pulp with a hammer, that would be a limit. You wouldn't take that, you know. So everybody has limits, and I feel like this notion of no limits, it what it really is a conversation about control and power, and it's somebody asserting control and power that they don't actually have, because in a dynamic. My power in my relationship with my submissive comes because I've earned it. Like, I've earned her trust and I've earned her power. Like, it's her choice to give me her power in a total power exchange. And that doesn't happen because I stood here and demanded it.
Mm-mm.
And I didn't say to her, well, to you, I didn't say to you, you have no limits in our relationship. We had a very, you know, upfront conversation about what your hard limits are and what your soft limits are, and how did you want to explore the rabbit hole, and what were you open to, and what didn't work for you. And you know, I know about your limits. I know that you're not going to get involved in gunplay. I know that you're not going to get involved with children or animals or scat. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives you the freedom to really explore your submission in a rabbit hole context, where in subspace you can discover more about your sexuality than you ever have. But if I had started out in our very first conversation by saying, you know, you can enter into a total power exchange with me, and that means you have no limits, I don't think we would have been together 2 years.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, it's a big red flag for me. That's really significant. The next one I'm interested in your take on, Lily, because having a sub who idolizes you, or a dom who idolizes you, tell me about like what your context is for selecting that as a red flag.
So I find that it's dangerous to put people on a pedestal very highly, because often you're refusing to see them as another human being and accept that they have flaws. And then sometimes what happens, especially with submissives, are they think that you're all this and that you're perfect. And then when you break that illusion by doing something that is not their perfect fantasy of you, they're not seeing the real you, and they realize that you're a different person than they thought, because they were fantasizing, essentially. They were not they weren't seeing what was in front of them. They were just making up this fantasy version of the person that you are.
Yeah, I think that's the point, right? Is that they're literally engaging with a fantasy. And it creates a space for a great deal of disagreement.
So it's not so much like, oh, you can't worship your partner, so much as, you know, it's more for the start of a relationship where you need to realize that this is another human being.
Yeah.
And they are a human being. And there are great things about them, but there are not so great things too. And that's okay.
Right.
And that doesn't make them any less. And you can still worship that, but you need to worship those flaws too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not just positive aspects.
So, and that just plays into, for me, this isn't for everybody, but for me, being in a 24/7 TPE dynamic with relationship is what's huge for me, because that's exactly what it is. I love and worship the whole person that he is, everything, all the bits and pieces, I always say. And
you love that, the whole person.
Yes. And that deepens the level we can go into the rabbit hole, the trust that we have, the ongoing communication, dialogue. I mean, you get to also see them as a real person. They, you know, they do real things. They're not just, I'm showing up for a scene and it's someone dressed up in all latex with a mask, and that person plays with me, and then I don't see them again for a week or a month or whatever. We all know what that's like when your people say, well, I'm dating, it's real great, I really know him. No, okay, wait till you stay 24/7 and then you'll start to know him or her.
Right.
So I think that's important. I think people need to realize that.
The next concern that you raise, asking money for or for gifts right away, is an interesting one. I've not had that as a something I've encountered. Have you encountered that as a experience that would have you put this in the red flag category?
I put that in the red flag category more so because it's not necessarily a red flag as in, oh, this person is bad, so much as you need to be understand that this person probably is not looking for something genuine, and you need to expect to be offering money and gifts consistently if you want that person's time and attention, because otherwise you're probably not going to get it, and they're going to vanish once the financial benefits end for them.
So that this is more of a red flag for relationships. So if you start having an encounter, or you have an encounter or a few encounters with somebody, and then they start demanding money and gifts, you're making the observation that for a relationship, this is probably a red flag.
Yes, it's not necessarily that they're bad, right. But if unless that's your thing and you're prepared to enter into a financial dynamic, then you need to back out of that, unless that's what you want.
Yeah. And again, I would say that that comes back to basic communication, right? If there's basic communication, then the person who is the femdom or the findom or the seeking arrangement person or, you know, the sugar baby or the hooker, they're all just going to be straight about what their expectations are.
And, right. It's important to be very clear about what you expect.
Yeah. And that way you can avoid hassles. Okay. Good enough. I like the next item that you raise as a red flag. If the person you're with is hateful and or derogatory when speaking about previous partners, that's very often a pause. That would hit a pause button for me. Like, what's going on here? Like, why are they so agitated about their past relationship?
There's right. Two sides to every story, they often say. And, you know, I've been in abusive relationships in my past. And when I talked about my partners in the past, I was always very frank that, you know, this person was abusive to me rather than, oh, this person is an asshole. And just leaving it at that.
Yeah.
I, you know, clearly explained that this person did this thing to her and it hurt me very deeply. And that's, you know, that's how I approach it, is explaining in a more clear way rather than, oh, that person was such a piece of shit and just not yeah. seeming to have any real reason for that.
Yeah. And I think that that's fair. And that sort of ties into the next one, where if they're taking their bad talk into their local kink community as well, that would also raise a red flag, because the kink community is very forgiving. And, you know, not everybody realizes that not every relationship works out. And so if you're talking really badly about the community that you're part of, that would raise a red flag, I would think, too.
I think that it does somewhat depend, because I often warn people about my local community, because there was a serial rapist in a nearby community who I talked to some members of my local community about, and they claimed he was safe when 10 women came forward about this person.
Really?
And they continue to interact with him. They continue to support him and claim that he's safe. And I cannot support that in good conscience. No. Say, oh yeah, you should get involved with this community because they're safe, when I don't feel that they're safe, because right. they support a person who is very clearly a rapist. So it really does depend. But if they have no real reason to, and they're just forbidding you from attending local events and mixing with people, then that's a red flag.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that the next item you bring up is probably about as bright, flashing, waving red flag as there can be in kink. And that is the idea of using abandonment as a tool of punishment. It's like basic relationship, like 101. Doesn't necessarily relate to kink, but definitely true in a kink dynamic also, where you have a dom who's so unskilled in their dominance that they would choose abandonment as a tool of punishment.
Yes, and I find that there's an important distinction between abandonment and needing some space to sort through emotions. It's okay right. to take a little bit of time and say, hey, I need some space to process my emotions right now. But it's a whole nother thing to be like, oh, you're worthless, I'm leaving now. And then not knowing when they're coming back, if they're coming back, what your relationship is. Because that's what I encountered in my abusive relationship with mm-hmm. my first dominant, was I didn't know if we were okay. I didn't know if he was coming back. I just didn't know what was going on. Whereas, you know, if a partner just says, hey, I need some time to cool off, that means I understand that I'm not being left here and ditched. It's that they need to calm down before yeah. they can be logical and rational, which is very healthy and you know, best for everyone involved.
The key there is abandonment requires no communication.
Right.
So if we're talking about tenets of kink or really any relationship, communication is the center of everything. And so abandonment is not really following the tenets of any type of relationship, whether you are a 24/7 or whether it's just intermittent. There has to be communication. And you're, like you say, you didn't know what's going on. The reason there's no communication, they're not explaining what's going to happen next.
One of the tools that Lady Pecra and I use is we'll say, we need to put the relationship or the dynamic on a timeout while we talk about something that's important to get resolved.
And I think that's very important in a DS dynamic, is to have space to put things aside and talk as equals. And I think that's important for consent as well, to be equals until you aren't, essentially.
Yeah,
I agree.
The next one, insisting on violating your hard limits as a punishment. Well, that's just a total red
flag.
That one's pretty clear-cut. Just don't do that. End of story.
Yeah, exactly.
That's bad.
That's right.
It absolutely is. Yeah, they're criminal. There are criminal penalties for that.
Well, it's rape or it's assault.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be a million things.
No, there's criminal penalties for that.
Yeah, that's not right.
So don't do it. Okay, the next one, when they try and make you feel guilty in order to get what they want, that sort of lives in the same place as the abandonment as a punishment tool. It's a basically, you know, we did a podcast a while back on, we called it power failure, and this is one of those things where it's just a failure of the dominant to, or even the submissive, to be in communication in a way that's clean. It's completely dirty communication. It's dirty pool.
Yeah, it's manipulation is what it is, and you should not be trying to manipulate someone into getting what you want. You should be having clear, honest communication instead of, oh, mistress, I really want this. It's, hey, mistress, would you be comfortable doing this thing with me? I would really like it if you would do that. That's different from, oh, come on, please do this. I really want it. You know, that's
right.
Don't do that. That's really shitty. And it's pressuring people into doing things that they don't need pressured into doing.
It's also totally opposite of what we're trying to create in dynamics. Power exchange for one, and then submission or dominance. If I'm submitting, I'm gifting my submission to this person. I don't need to feel guilty into doing that. That defeats the whole purpose.
Yeah. I think the next one's important too. It's mostly something that would occur early in a relationship where people are demanding that you expose yourself to them immediately. And I think it goes to the heart of this conversation, which is DS dynamics occur in the context of consent. And if you're not prepared to give your consent, then you shouldn't be required to send a nude picture of yourself. You know, just like...
Well, there's also an assumption that just because it's a DS dynamic, that all DS dynamics are sexual.
Exactly.
And that is just a wrong assumption. Lots of kinks out there and lots of dynamics are non-sexual purely. Now, that doesn't mean the person, it's not their kink and they don't get aroused by it, but they're not having sex. And that's a huge assumption.
And, you know, it goes to the other thing too, which is I don't want to have somebody sending me pictures I didn't request.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that more than anything. And that's my pet peeve of, like, I didn't ask to see your junk, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know you. And out of the blue, you send me that.
Not only that, I hate when people do that, even if I'm interested in them sexually, because I like the surprise of and the anticipation of wanting to know what they got in their pants. And when someone just sends it to me, it's like, well, there that goes.
Yeah. There's a site that we're doing some work with called Dating Kinky.
Oh, yes, I've heard of them.
Yeah, and they have a consent decree. So basically, you can't post a explicit photograph as your cover picture. And if you scroll on somebody's profile, the cover pictures are blocked and you have to select to see them.
Oh yeah, you got to tap to see that. That's a good policy.
I think it's so great because I just think I should be able to choose. If I want to see that, I can see that. If I don't, I don't. You know, I shouldn't just be accosted by it. You know.
And then the last item on your agenda is if they offer to mentor you out of the blue. So speak to that a little bit.
So I find that a lot of people think that mentorship is a power exchange dynamic when it is not. I often find that they will use mentorship as a cover to get something else from somebody, like usually sex or kink. So it's not inherently bad, but you need to be aware that someone offering this could be have alternative intentions. Like, that's why I don't do it. I love helping newbies. So, like, I would gladly mentor somebody if they asked me, but I don't like to offer that because it's a red flag to me, because, you know, I might not mean anything bad and wouldn't take advantage of somebody like that, but somebody else would. So you need to watch and make sure, because, you know, a red flag is not necessarily danger, danger, get away now. It's this could be suspicious. I'd better keep an eye on this, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But that's what I mean by red flag.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this goes to the heart of this whole post, which I appreciated you posting, which is that you're really talking about creating an environment of not just safety, but also about giving people their agency and their ability to be self-expressed as kinksters. And, you know, I think the truth is that there are bad people out there, but they're also just good people who don't understand kink, who do bad things. And I
they're
think
ignorant.
They're ignorant. And I think it's okay if you say, somebody says to you, you know, I want to have a dynamic where there's no ground rules. It's okay to say, okay, well, we're not going to do that. And that's a bit of a red flag. Let's have a conversation about that. Because again, we're talking about an environment where, like, all relationships occur in communication, and kink relationships on top of communication require consent and trust. And all of these red flags sort of dig at that consent and trust. That's really what they're doing.
So this kind of goes into this whole other topic. I didn't get to ask this in the beginning, but Lily, I read your about, and there's lots of parts of your about that resonate for me. And one of them I just wanted to ask, and maybe you could clarify. So you say you're demisexual, and then give your description on your about. And then I'm wondering, is that different than being sapiosexual? Because
yes.
When I read your definition, it sounds very close to sapiosexual.
They are often very similar. But demisexual, there's two different definitions. One is sexual attraction to personality. The second is, which is more commonly used, is that you require an emotional connection in order to be attracted to somebody.
Right.
So sapiosexual is being attracted to intelligence. So you have to get to know someone to know whether or not they're intelligent. But for example, someone that I find attractive sexually, for example, I find it attractive that they sew.
Right.
And, you know, that's part of their personality that I find attractive, is that they're artsy like that. And that's, you know, so that doesn't, you know, being able to sew doesn't necessarily indicate intelligence like a sapiosexual person would be attracted to. So does
so that- that's it, that's an interesting way to think about it, because you opened something up for me, because I've said I'm sapiosexual because I do like to know. So I like to, I'm interested in people's minds, whether it's full intelligence or not. I'm interested in the way people think. But I am very much, I need to have an emotional, I have to be emotionally moved by someone before they become attractive. And that, I mean, it's to the extreme for me. It's always been that way for me.
Yes,
I remember girls are like looking at guys or whoever, other girls, whatever they're interested in, and go, oh, that she's hot or he's hot. And I remember looking at them in a visual way and thinking, I guess physique, you know, and I'd start to pick apart like, okay, they have muscles here or whatever, you know, and it's very, segmented in my image, in my head, but then they open their mouth and I'm like, oh fuck no.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yes.
And those are two extremes, vice versa. But for me, it really is, I'm waiting for them to open their mouth and have a conversation with me before I'm like, yes, this person is super attractive. And
yes,
then everything else falls into place. So, you know, that opened my eyes when you had the demi and the sapio, and I'm looking at those two together. And now that I hear your explanation, it's hard for me to know. I like both. But what am I, a sapio demisexual?
Quite frankly, yeah, you might be. You might need both. You might be a mix
yeah.
of both.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate being able to read that, because that was a new way of me seeing myself in your writing. And I think that was really great.
Cool. I'm glad that helped you.
Yeah. Very cool. Hey, Lily, I really want to acknowledge you for that statement about red flags and creating a conversation for us to have. And thank you for coming on and sharing your thoughts with us and our audience. And let's stay connected.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I really enjoyed being here and helping share, the knowledge that I have with members of the community.
Yeah, likewise. All right. Have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
That's it for today. You can find us on your favorite podcast directory. We also have an RSS feed. If you're interested in online coaching for kinksters or online domination, you can visit our Patreon website at Lady Petra Playground. And if you're having comments or suggestions or drink ideas for our podcast, you can email me at ladypetraplayground@gmail.com.
That's it.
Cheers.